It underlines how difficult this next summit meeting is going to be.
North Korea appears to have an undisclosed missile command base. It's Wednesday, January 23rd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China and Cameroon look to boost ties. Sri Lanka has a special port deal. The herbal medicine trade is in search of a cure, a tattoo to look after you, and the mule, in the movies, that is. It's all on today's VOA Asia. One of some 20 undeclared ballistic missile operating bases in North Korea serves as a missile headquarters. That's part of the findings of a new report by the Center for Strategic and International Studies. The report says the Sinari operating base and the Nodong missiles deployed at the location fit into North Korea's presumed nuclear military strategy by providing an operational-level nuclear or conventional first-strike capability. The discovery of an undeclared missile headquarters comes 3 days after U.S. President Donald Trump announced Friday that he looks forward to another summit to discuss denuclearization with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in late February. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke via Skype about the report with Paul Evans, professor in the School of Public Policy and Global Affairs at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver.
Well, I don't think that the discovery of the missile base, while it's new news, it's an old story. There's been no effort by the North Koreans to disclose or identify where their nuclear and their missile capabilities lie. So this is not a I don't think it's a new piece of information that suddenly clouds the meeting. This is the reality of the situation. The U.S. North Korea discussion at the head of government level is very preliminary. It has not even got to the basics yet of exactly what can be revealed, what can't be revealed, much less then how things are going to start being removed.
What kind of effect might that have on the next summit meeting if it is to take place?
It would be difficult to imagine this stopping the meeting because both sides have known that this has not yet been part of even an agreement on the declaration of facilities. It underlines how difficult this next summit meeting is going to be on the basis of there having been very little progress on any of the inferred actions by North Korea and the United States still not winding down the sanctions. So it's almost as if we're in a time warp where we're going back as if it's a first meeting that didn't cover some ground. Whether it can or not, the odds are not very high that something breakthrough is going to come here, but hope springs eternal.
Given that, what does either side, or both sides for that matter, want to get out of this meeting?
Well, I think that the politics for both sides are important. Mr. Trump is trying to move ahead with a special initiative in his own special way that he hopes will produce some kind of result. I think the more interesting logic is right now on the North Korean side. And as before earlier meetings, this is being accompanied by a series of interactions with South Korea, but particularly with China. So whether under those circumstances President Kim is going to come with any new kinds of proposals is in question. I think, you know, we can't distance this from the U.S.-China economic negotiations. I mean, Xi Jinping is in many ways in the middle of both a difficult negotiation with the United States on trade, but he is also the broker. He's the person who can have at least some influence on what Kim is willing to put on that table. And so this could be a desire to stall for time. to let this thing run later to see where the U.S.-China negotiations go. Or he may see some help Kim take some steps towards keeping the process in play with the U.S.
How much input do you think Xi Jinping has had already, given the last meeting between he and Kim just a week or two ago?
Well, it's correct that the North Koreans are not moving very far without consultations, obviously, with Xi. And whether that is going to produce leverage to move forward, or whether it's going to be a delay and keep the status quo, the murky status quo, indefinitely. I think, you know, the other factor that has come into play in this is that if we imagine four musicians trying to play a quartet, we have essentially North Korea, China, and increasingly South Korea playing to one kind of melody, whereas the United States is something on the outside. It has the biggest instrument, but it is listening, and it is not in it. It's not the lead instrument in this quartet going forward. And that's what makes all of this so peculiar, is that you have three countries going in one kind of direction on this, and the U.S. Both divided and not moving forward in its ambitions.
Paul Evans is professor in the School of Public Policy and Global Affairs at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. South Korea says troop talks stall, U.S. demand unacceptable. Indonesian campus rape victims seek justice. A report says United States to seek extradition of Huawei executive from Canada. The USGS says two quakes strike off of Indonesia's Sumbawa. Indonesian president changes course on release of radical cleric. You'll find much more on all of these stories, plus a whole lot more, when you visit VOA Asia Facebook and our website. That's voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Indonesia is placing conditions on the pending early release of Abu Bakar Bashir, the radical Muslim cleric linked to the 2002 bombings on Bali Island. President Joko Widodo said Tuesday that Bashir must agree to pledge his loyalty to the state and its secular ideology as a condition of his parole. A week ago, Widodo said that he would grant Bashir an unconditional release from prison based on the cleric's age and ill health. Bashir is in his early 80s. Happening now in Asia, more than 100 academics and former diplomats are calling on China to release two Canadians who have been detained in apparent retaliation for the arrest of a top Chinese tech executive in Canada. The letter, by a wide array of China experts from around the world, is addressed to Chinese President Xi Jinping. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping's special representative was in Cameroon this weekend to improve relations between the two countries. Trade and security ties have steadily grown between Beijing and Yaoundé, but tensions between Cameroonian and Chinese miners has given China a bad name, as Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the eastern town of Batari Oya.
When Cameroonian President Paul Biya hosted China's special representative Yang Jiechi on Friday, both men had nothing but good things to say. Biya welcomed China's Belt and Road Initiative, Beijing's multi-billion dollar plan to connect Asia, Europe, and Africa. Yang said bilateral relations had reached a new starting point with important development opportunities. When asked by a reporter for VOA about the common belief that Chinese are exploiting Cameroon, Yang called it a misunderstanding. He says Cameroon and China need to work closely to make their people realize that they stand to benefit a lot. But while Yang visited the capital, about 60 Cameroonian miners protested outside a Chinese-run gold mining operation in the village of Ngura. The miners have blocked access to the site since Thursday. Protesting miner Patrice Wuyu says that Chinese competition exploits and destroys Cameroon's natural resources.
Les textes sont clairs. Y a pas d'activité minière.
He says Chinese miners violate Cameroon laws, which prohibit mining on riverbeds, swampy areas, and waterfalls. They will keep this mining site closed, he says, until the government forces the guilty miners to face justice. Protest leader Rigobert Ngom says the Chinese bribe corrupt Cameroon officials to overlook their code violations. He says they also lure teenagers out of school to dig for gold.
L'entrepreneur, l'homme d'affaires de l'Est, y gagnerait.
Ngom says he is surprised that the government gives mining licenses to the Chinese when there are qualified Cameroonians who own mining enterprises and are ready to industrialize their country. But while mining remains a contentious issue, Cameroon's Minister of the Economy, Planning and Regional Development disputes the notion that China simply exploits. China is Cameroon's primary investor, according to the ministry, putting more than $400 million per year into the country's roads, dams, telecommunications, stadiums, and housing projects. Critics note much of the investment goes towards assessing Cameroon's natural resources, while the country is at growing risk of debt distress. But ministry spokesman Alamin Usman May says China is beginning to offer more help than in the past. Beijing in November, he notes, gave Yaounde aid equal to $3 million to help people displaced by Cameroon's separatist crisis in English-speaking region.
We are very pleased that our partners like China are offering humanitarian support. Up to 1.8 billion CFA material, we have signed the letter of exchange to supply to these two regions.
China's special envoy, Yang, during his visit, announced the cancellation of about $5 million of Cameroon's debt as well, though the remaining amount owed was not clear. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Betari Oya, Eastern Cameroon.
Coming up, a very long-term deal. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia, a 6.6 magnitude earthquake struck south of the Indonesian town of Rabah, off the central island of Sumbawa, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. There was no immediate tsunami warning or reports of damage or casualties. The quake followed a magnitude 6 that struck in the same area earlier in the day. You're on steady ground when you visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a nearly century-long lease on a new port and struggling herbal medicine shops are the topics on today's VOA Asia business scene with Skylar Ogden.
China is building a huge port city in Sri Lanka on land reclaimed from the sea. The $1.4 billion project is being co-developed by the Sri Lankan government as part of China's Belt and Road Initiative. It is Sri Lanka's largest single direct foreign investment. Alexi Gunasekera is the commercial counselor for the Sri Lankan embassy.
The marina bay that will be developed in the port city will attract the affluent tourists to Sri Lanka. India also will get the benefit. The entire region will get the benefit of that tourism sector. So I think this port city is not only for Sri Lanka, it's for the entire region and for entire South Asia.
Almost half of the reclaimed land will be handed over to China on a 99-year lease, after which it will revert back to Sri Lankan ownership. Many have criticized the deal, saying China is pulling Sri Lanka into a debt trap. But not everyone sees it that way. Gao Zikai is the vice president for the Center for China and Globalization.
Sri Lanka is a fully independent and sovereign country, and there is no infringement or violation of any of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Sri Lanka.
The reclamation part of the port city project was completed last week. Phase two will involve the construction of housing, marinas, roads, and other infrastructure projects. Chinese herbal medicine shops in Taiwan are struggling to survive because of a quirk in Taiwanese law. Approximately 200 mom-and-pop dispensaries are closing their doors every year. Many Taiwanese still value the disappearing herbal remedy shops. Guo Chongfu is a second-generation herbal dispenser.
Chinese herbal medicine stores is a unique culture and icon in Taiwan. It is a very long tradition.
In the 1990s, authorities limited government licenses for dispensaries in an effort to regulate their businesses. Their hope was that professionally trained Chinese medicine doctors would take over the herbal stores. But the low pay failed to attract doctors and pharmacists. Authorities have not issued any new licenses since 1998, and those that do exist cannot be passed down to younger generations. Guo Chongfu.
When the Chinese medicine shops are forced to close because the second generation cannot carry on legally, our livelihood will be in jeopardy.
The license shortage has prompted protests on the streets of Taipei, and the government is in talks with industry leaders to find a way forward. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. A South Korean lawmaker says the United States and South Korea are struggling to narrow differences over sharing the cost of maintaining U.S. troops after a U.S. demand for a 50% increase in the South's contribution. Despite 10 rounds of talks since March, the allies have failed to strike an accord to replace an expired 2014 deal. This and more on VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, in the future, a tattoo may not only be a way for someone to express themselves, it may also be used to monitor a genetic condition or even control a prosthetic device. VOA's Kevin Enix sketches details.
It's estimated that about 1 in 5 people around the world have a tattoo. But researchers in Portugal are making tattoos that are more about science than body art.
For the first time, we have created a method that allows us inkjet printing of highly stretchable electronic skin that can be transferred to the human skin, similar to the kid's temporary tattoos.
The tattoo is printed, then covered with a liquid metal alloy that conducts electricity. It's immersed in water, then applied to the skin, just like a temporary tattoo. It's cheap and easy.
What's new in our method is the fabrication technology, because previous methods for fabrication of stretchable electronics were costly, labor-intensive, and complex.
Once applied to the skin, it can read or send electric signals. This could be a great leap forward in treating people with diseases that affect their nervous system.
We place these tattoos over the skin, then we can stimulate muscles or nerves. This can be useful for some patient conditions with neurological disorders. For instance, people with spinal cord injuries would be able to walk again.
It also could help amputees manipulate their prosthetics by acting as artificial nerve tissue.
Healthcare is the application we're really focused on. Another area of my lab is focused on more generally human-machine interaction and soft robotics. And so these materials, like I said before, also have applications as artificial skin and artificial nervous tissues.
And since the application is temporary, getting one is way less painful than getting a real tattoo. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
For over 50 years, Oscar-winning filmmaker and actor Clint Eastwood has portrayed tough characters, bounty hunters, police detectives, and macho heartthrobs. In his latest movie, The Mule, the octogenarian now softens his masculine persona to interpret a frail old man whose financial hardship forces him to take up a job as a drug courier, or a mule, for a Mexican drug cartel. VOA's Penelope Palou delivers the story.
Oh. Need help, sir?
Oh, officer, hi.
You need help?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
What do you got there?
Pecans. I'm delivering pecans to my niece.
Pecans? Here.
Yeah, pecans. She makes the worst pecan pie you've ever tasted.
No cop would suspect that Earl Stone is trafficking drugs. An old, upright, white man, Stone is above suspicion. But despite his quiet demeanor, Stone is resilient and the cartel's top mule, transporting millions of dollars worth of cocaine. A seasoned traveler who spent his career driving around the country as a horticulturalist, he knows how to navigate the American road system. He is never stopped for traffic violations and operates under the DEA agents' noses, even when he crosses paths with top agent Colin Bates, bent on capturing the elusive mule no one has ever seen, but everyone is talking about.
You got to think about family.
Yeah.
Anniversary is important. But, you know, I'm the king of missing anniversaries. That's the problem, yes.
That's the first one I've missed, so.
Good luck. Don't follow my footsteps and do what I did. I put work in front of family. And this is the most important thing.
Bradley Cooper plays Officer Bates. He describes Eastwood's character.
It's a man on a path, reckoning his past, reckoning for his making up for mistakes, making peace with himself. But it's a reckoning for how he's lived his life.
Stone's financial troubles and his desire to make up for past mistakes and lost chances with his estranged wife and daughter lies at the heart of the story. Broke and rejected by his family, he takes a job as a drug mule, not out of greed, at least in the beginning, but out of despair to make things right. And though that is part of the film narrative, in some way, it reflects Eastwood's real life. Iris, his estranged on-screen daughter, is played by his real daughter, Allison Eastwood, who says she did not always have the best relationship with her dad.
It's been challenging because I do have such a great relationship with my dad these days, so I've had to sort of go back and dig around in the past of when I might have not been so happy with him and bring that up as an actor. You know, because this character is really angry.
As Stone makes up for lost time with his family, he's running out of time with the law. DEA agents are on his trail, and the cartel tightens its control over him, even as he is determined to keep his own timetable on the road. His illicit income is becoming more and more visible as he spreads money around.
He almost becomes like a Robin Hood character because he makes all this money unlawfully. But he goes around and starts helping people that need things.
But despite Eastwood's romantic spin on his stint as a drug mule, critics say the film glosses over the criminality of drug trafficking and the devastating effects of drugs and drug cartels on society. Penelope Palou, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on the radio, PSU Radio, Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. If you miss any part of our program, you can always go to our website at voanews.com, where you'll find today's program and programs past, all there for you to click on, download, and listen to. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman. Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a nice day.